This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson, guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Plenty to get to this hour here. More snubs from the NBA 75 list, more or less from the upcoming NFL weekend, and getting you ready for some Major League Baseball coverage that's going to start after us right here, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN Radio. But in the meantime, there is all this pesky Ben Simmons business we have going on. The 76ers superstar, again, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, met with the team today, has talked to team personnel about not being in a place mentally where he feels like he can go out there and perform at the level that he needs to. And so for more on that situation, earlier in the show, we got a chance to visit with ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps, who has dealt with this situation up close and personal, and we had to ask Tim and check in and see how he was feeling about the prospect of, as Daryl Morey brought up on the radio, the 76ers president the other day, the idea that we may have to deal with this and strap in for four more years.
No, I don't think so, Mike. And look, I mean, I understand what Daryl was saying there and that he's willing to take as long as it, to have this go as long as it needs to for it to get to a resolution to where either Ben is playing for them and happy or they've moved on in a trade Daryl's happy with. But I think what's more likely here is that this lasts another 4 months and that sometime between now and the trade deadline in early February, the Sixers come up with a deal that makes sense for them to move on from Ben, and they do. I think the thing that's got to be determined here in the interim is what's going to happen in the meantime, right? And is Ben Simmons at some point going to be able to get back on the court with his teammates, which is certainly what the Sixers would like, or is he going to be sent home in some form or fashion and he'll just be away from the team? But I think one way or the other, you know, in the short term, that's what needs to be figured out. And then I think in the medium term, between now and the deadline, you know, the longer the Sixers can wait, the more likely it is they can get a deal that they're happy with. And then this whole thing can come to a resolution.
4 months isn't 4 years, but it still seems like a long time for us to be doing this dance that we've been doing.
I'm on it every day. I would like it to be 4 days, so I feel you on that.
So, Tim, today, the dance that we're doing is we get the news, or we get the word from Simmons' agent, Rich Paul, that he's now mentally unfit to play at this time, I believe, was the direct quote. So, does the news from today change anything?
It's hard to know, really, Amber, where this is going right now, right? I mean, I think, really, we've been in the same position since Ben officially didn't come to training camp 3.5 weeks ago, right? And ultimately, this has to end one of two ways. Either Ben decides to play and is committed to playing, or he's away from the team until this situation is resolved with a trade, right? And that, all these other things that have happened since then, him coming back and getting sent home, getting suspended for a game and talking to them today, and now, you know, his status is up in the air again, all of that noise kind of just comes back to the same two outcomes, right? And ultimately, this is going to go one way or the other. And the irony in the Sixers playing the Brooklyn Nets tonight in their home opener is that this is really in a obviously, it's a much different situation, but it's sort of the same exact thing that the Nets found themselves in with Kyrie Irving, right? Where ultimately they had to decide, are we going to try to find a way to make this work and have Kyrie play some of the time? Or are we going to just say, look, man, until you get a shot and you can play all the time, you need to just go home. We need to move forward with a group of guys that are going to be here for every game. And ultimately that's the way the Nets decided this was going to go, right? And I think for the Sixers, they're still kind of working their way toward that sort of decisive point. And I think all this other stuff, it's sort of just, like I said, it all comes back to the same point ultimately, which is that, you know, at some point a decision is going to have to be made about what Ben's status is going forward, both by him and by the Sixers. And until that happens, all this other stuff is just sort of noise that obfuscates that same point.
ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps with us on the Goodyear Hotline. I don't know what this says about me, Tim, but I keep getting asked about why there hasn't been some sort of confrontation yet between Ben Simmons and his teammates here. I think people typecasting the football player, but have we gotten close to anything like that in the locker room in the instances where Ben has been around the team where this group has been frustrated enough for someone to say something to Ben Simmons on this front?
I mean, they had a conversation this morning, and look, I think ultimately – in the NBA, and you know this, Mike, I mean, from playing high-level sports like you did, I mean, guys generally are sympathetic to guys sorting out their business, right? Like, everybody knows pro sports is a professional business, and guys ask for trades, and guys get traded, and guys get cut, and everything else, right? So everybody knows this is, you know, this isn't some kind of fairy tale land where everything works out great. But I think the frustration around the Sixers is just sort of with the way this has dragged on, with this uncertainty hanging over everything, right? Where every day there's a new story and the situation doesn't really change and Ben Simmons doesn't really have to speak to it, right? I mean, he hasn't spoken to the media one time since that game seven, which is just over 4 months ago. It's 4 months ago this week when they lost that game seven to the Hawks here in Philly. And Ben Simmons obviously passed out of that dunk. So I think there is some frustration with the fact that this is sort of casting a pall over the team and they can't move forward. Again, going back to that Kyrie situation in Brooklyn, sort of like how that sort of hung over the team until they made a clean break. And I think if Ben Simmons came to them and said, hey, look, guys, I'm ready to play. I'm going to give it my all. I'm not thrilled with how things are going. I want to be traded. But until then, I'm with you guys until that happens. I think everybody here would be happy. I think the team and the players and coaches would all be happy he's on the court because they're a much better team with him than without him. But I think if there is any frustration, and there's obviously some, it's about the way this whole situation is just dragging on. And, you know, these guys all have to get answer questions about it. And it just sort of hangs over everything they're doing until there's some sort of resolution as to what's going on.
Not the first situation we've seen drag on when a player has wanted out of a team in that league. Normally, I feel like with the ADs and the James Hardens of the world, we end up just moving on. They find success in another uniform and we forget about all the drama. Is that going to happen here, right, Tim, do you think? Or do you think that Ben Simmons' reputation has taken too much of a hit here?
No, I mean, look, I think once he gets traded, I think that's how it will go. But the interesting thing, Amber, about this situation compared to James Harden or Jimmy Butler or Anthony Davis is, A, those guys, in particular James Harden and Anthony Davis, had a list of teams that were lined up to trade for them. And so it wasn't a matter of waiting for the price to get to a point where Philly feels comfortable to make a trade. Like, if the Sixers were getting, you know, James Harden and Anthony Davis offers for Ben Simmons, he'd be traded already, right? So part of the problem is they're not getting the kind of offers that they think are commensurate with his talent level. So that's part of why the trade hasn't happened yet. And the other thing to remember is that Daryl Morey, of probably any general manager in the NBA, is very uncomfortable being in an uncomfortable situation. And he is not going to make a trade until he thinks it's a trade that's good enough to keep the Sixers in championship contention or make them a more likely championship team than they are now with Ben Simmons on the court playing. And so because of that, they're just stuck in this limbo where there isn't going to be a resolution anytime soon. Like, normally, if one of those two things was different, if the organization wasn't so aligned to what they were doing, or if Ben Simmons had more value in the current marketplace, a deal would already be done and this would be over. So from that standpoint, it's going to drag on longer and that will maybe have it linger a little longer with people. But once Ben Simmons gets traded, whenever that eventuality happens, I don't think this is going to stick to him in any more way than it did for those guys, right? Once you're traded and you're in a new situation, people are just going to move on and watch him play basketball again.
God, we can only hope it can one day become that simple once again. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Tim, we appreciate the time. We look forward to hopefully not doing this every week for 4 years.
I hope not too, Mike. Thanks for having me, guys.
Again, a great conversation with Tim Bontemps, our ESPN NBA reporter. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, where you can get in touch with us on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. We'll take your calls. And coming up next, explore the NFL quarterback that right now finds himself in the crosshairs of a much larger conversation. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Deshaun Watson, still plenty of pending legal issues for him. But again, according to John McClain at the Houston Chronicle, the Texans and the Dolphins could have a Deshaun Watson deal done this week. The Dolphins have lost five straight. This is, again, football deciding everything above all else. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. We'll get into more of how this situation around Deshaun Watson affects Tua Tagovailoa, the current quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. All of that and more here. But before we do that, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We've had a lot of conversation today about Ben Simmons. We just replayed some of our conversation with ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps, and we wanted to get you in on it here. Let's go to Don in Dallas. Don, you're on Candy and Golo Jr. What's up?
What's up, Junior? Hey, what a lot of people are failing to remember is this all started with Doc Rivers saying that he couldn't win with Ben Simmons. That's just like your spouse. You overhear your spouse talking to a guy getting to go on a date, and you catch her, and you're like, oh, no, baby, I want to be with you for the rest of my life. That marriage is over. It's done. I applaud Ben because he's been 100% transparent. Unlike Kevin Durant in OKC, where he had a report come out to where he'd rather go play with Golden State Warriors while he's playing against Golden State in the conference finals. I mean, how would you feel if your quarterback, which was what, Brady Quinn, say he wanted to go play with Alabama, and then the portal was available then, he'd go play with them, you know, after you guys lose to them. You know, I mean, like,
yeah, that's no, just unheard of. I understand the point definitely, and Doc Rivers is, relative to where we are right now, Amber, not without blame in that way, but I will say this. I always felt like that was a straw that broke the camel's back situation, right? Because Doc Rivers, and I think the rest of the Philadelphia fans, had been pretty defensive of Ben Simmons in the time leading up to that. Doc was a little too honest in that moment. Now, I will say the notion that Ben Simmons has been transparent since then, I don't necessarily buy, because we haven't heard any of this straight from him. It's all been reports about Ben Simmons as well.
Right. I think it's a bit overstated if we're talking about Doc Rivers saying that he can't win with Ben Simmons. I mean, it feels like as time has gone on that we've attributed even more to those quotes from Doc Rivers, when the reality of the situation was he made those comments during a presser where he was asked like 37 other questions, and we don't remember his answers there. We don't remember all the times that he defended Ben Simmons, which was a ton of times as well. And of course, when he was a little bit transparent about some of the issues there with how Ben Simmons was playing the playoffs, and all of a sudden, you know, that's the straw that broke the camel's back. Really, these problems started with Ben Simmons, you could argue, long before that, because we've referenced numerous times, Mike, where those rumors surrounding Ben Simmons, surrounding the work ethic, surrounding the drama in the 76ers locker room, there's been questions around the relationship of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons for many years. I remember talking about it down in Miami a bunch when Jimmy Butler made the decision to go to the Heat, and why would he leave the Sixers to go down to the Heat when he was best friends with Joel Embiid, and the rumors were in part that he didn't like Ben Simmons' work ethic and that he didn't get along there with Ben Simmons. When Al Horford was on that team, remember Al Horford publicly made the comments about the drama in the locker room there, and everybody was guessing that that's probably a Joel Embiid-Ben Simmons issue. So it's been years long, this drama in the rumors circulating that locker room. When there's that much smoke, there's normally fire. It didn't just start in that moment with Doc Rivers somewhat calling Ben Simmons out during the playoffs.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Let's go to David in Maui. David, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What's up?
Okay, so it's real simple. This is the question. When the dust settles and everything is everything settles, who's going to be the one to take the fall? Who's going to be the one? This is why it happened.
This is why it happened with Ben Simmons?
As far as what happened, how, this whole debacle, how this handled, who's going to take ownership of this?
Well, I mean, I think everyone involved has already kind of seen, for the 76ers part of all this, I'm not sure what there is to take ownership of here beyond what we talked about with the last caller, Amber. Like, Doc Rivers said too much publicly in a way that, man, and listen, if you operate, like, my dad is as old school as it comes, guy who's a locker room guy all the time and would always prefer these kinds of things stay behind closed doors in the way that it's talked about here, that we present a united front, and that Doc wouldn't have been so honest in public in the way that he was. There's also the part of this that, again, you referenced what we've heard now kind of rumbling behind the scenes for a while in Ben Simmons, and what I'm sure has to be really aggravating. Like, if you have got a teammate that's extremely talented that you're relying on in the ways that Philadelphia has in this spot, and he has not lived up to it. Forget, like, I hate that this has devolved into a conversation, Amber, about just Ben's willingness to shoot. Like, if it were just that, I'm sorry. We saw Philly rally around Markelle Fultz and a guy who was going through some things physically, mentally, with his ability and desire to shoot. In a way, they rallied around because they saw how hard he was working at it and how much it matters. If that were the case here, I'd imagine they would do the same thing for Ben Simmons, and they're not, and that's telling to me.
Well, I think the inability to shoot here is an example of something bigger, where his inability to shoot shows an inability to work on the shot, which shows an inability in terms of work ethic, where he just doesn't seem to be that dude really committed to expanding his game. So it's more like the inability to shoot. It's not just really the shooting, but it's that is the example of this larger problem that possibly surrounds Ben Simmons, and that certainly has been rumored to surround him for years. Maybe he's a little bit too comfortable coming off number one pick, and maybe things came a little too easy for him early in his career and early in his tenure and coming into the league, and now he's not really willing to do that extra work to expand his game, and maybe he's comfortable where his game is at, and that could be frustrating for a player that you see that potential in. I just think what gets lost in this, my point when we were discussing with the last caller, is that, you know, Doc Rivers, he pumped up Ben Simmons before the season. He pumped up Ben Simmons during that regular season last season. He pumped up Ben Simmons during the playoffs, and then when they lose in the second round, he comes out and says, I don't know if he can be the point guard of a championship team, and all of a sudden it's like it's the one thing, even though the 3,000 other things Doc Rivers said about Ben Simmons was really positive. It is human psyche where we do tend to zero in on the one negative tweet about you as opposed to the other 5,000 positive tweets. Yes. Apparently that's like an actual human nature thing, and it's a problem now with social media. That's kind of what it feels like Ben Simmons has done here. But in fairness, neither side has handled this well. And at the end of the day, who gets the blame is, I kind of think, everybody involved. And then also, it's going to be dependent on where everybody goes from here. If the 76ers go on to win a championship without him, or if he goes on to win a championship without them in whatever uniform he ends up in, that's certainly going to play into the narrative when we look back on this whole situation.
History is written by the victors. There's no doubt. That's going to be what decides all of this. I am just glad that social media has apparently turned everyone into offensive linemen wired to only focus on the mistakes that we have made in the past here. Welcome to the neurotic world of large people. Coming up next, though, and we will get into more of what we talked about earlier, what we promised earlier, the situation for Tua Tagovailoa sitting in the midst of all this conversation about Deshaun Watson in Miami. Coming up next, though, we got to look towards this weekend in the NFL. The slate of games we got here. Can this Bears defense hold on for dear life long enough to give their rookie quarterback the chance to draw blood? We'll get to that after this word from 5-Hour Energy. Now, guys, what's your ultimate game day experience? Is it a tricked-out man cave? Maybe deluxe tailgating? No matter your dream, enter the 5-Hour Energy football sweepstakes for a chance to win $10,000 and make your ultimate game day experience a reality. To enter, buy any 5-Hour Energy product, then just upload the receipt. It's that easy. The 5-Hour Energy Football Sweepstakes. Enter today. No purchase necessary. Must be 18 and a legal resident of the U.S. This ends December 10th, 2021. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit the number 5HESport.com. That's 5HESport.com. Void where prohibited. Back after this. Kane Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson sitting in for Chris Kenny today. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And boy, oh boy, we got to get into some interesting cruise ship business coming up. Because Amber, I thought we were done with a lot of like cruise-related stuff. Have you ever, like, first off, I got to imagine being down in South Florida. You've been on a cruise before, right?
Oh, I've been on a bunch of cruises. In fact, like, literally, like, 3 weeks before the world shut down, I was on the world's largest cruise ship for a week, actually. And I don't know if I'm going to be back on a cruise ship ever again, because now my opinion about cruises slightly changed from living through a global pandemic. But that was such a more naive time.
You know what, Amber? I agree. Those were simpler times. We all looked at it. I mean, God, I've been on one cruise in my life, and all I can think about was how at the end of every floor, on every possible part of this ship, you could get ice cream there as a kid. And I thought that was the greatest thing in the world, that it was just like an unlimited supply of ice cream. We will get to in a little bit one group that I feel like has gone too far. I don't know how we come back from this point, but I feel like we have come from too far. That is for another time coming up in a little bit here. We'll get three and out to end the show. We will get everyone ready for Major League Baseball coming up at 7:30. But right now, we got the NFL coming up this weekend here. We got to take a look at some bold predictions made by our friends over on ESPN.com. That is where our producer, Shannon Penn, comes in. Shannon, we ready to look for a little more or less heading into the weekend?
Absolutely, Devin. Let's get it started.
Bears at Buccaneers.
All right, Chicago Bears at the champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Buccaneers, 12.5-point favorite. Mike, I will start with you. More or less likely that Tom Brady will commit more turnovers than Justin Fields. Not just picks, turnovers. That can be fumbles as well. More turnovers for Tom Brady than Justin Fields.
I am going to go less likely. I know the Bears' defense has been really good. Robert Quinn going to be out this weekend, though, however, the reserved COVID-19 list here. And, Amber, I just feel like for a Bears offensive line that continues to be the focus of this team, 22 sacks on the season surrendered here. Justin Fields can get you out of some of those, but too many of those against this pass rush from Todd Bowles' group, that's not going to be the medicine for this.
Yeah, I'm in full accord here with Mike. I mean, not to take anything away from that Bears D, they can get after it. But without Robert Quinn this week, that's a huge loss for the Bears. They'll have Khalil Mack. They won't have Quinn, though. Quinn already has recorded 5.5 sacks this year. He's off to a tremendous 2021. I think my opinion would be very different if he was available. But since he's not, I'll go less likely.
Eagles at Raiders.
All right, the Raiders in this matchup, 3-point favorite over the Eagles. Amber, I'll start with you on this one. Jalen Hurts will become the first quarterback to rush for 2 touchdowns in 3 straight games since 1950. More or less likely that Hurts will rush for 2 or more touchdowns?
I'll go more likely. The Raiders, they're 26th against the run. I think that Hurts can take advantage of that in this situation. He's tied for the most quarterback rushing touchdowns entering week 7. He leads his team in rushing yards. If anybody can do it, it will be Jalen Hurts, and it will be in this matchup against the Raiders.
I am going to say less likely just because, and this is wishful thinking for the city of Philadelphia, we have said often, ESPN Radio has more Philadelphia fans per capita than any department of the country, so I want what's best for them. And Nick Sirianni finally said in public what so many Philly fans have been crying out for. He said, we have to get the ball to Miles Sanders more. And so I feel like part of that is, even in these zone reads where we can make use of Jalen Hurts, there's going to be a concerted effort to get Miles Sanders more touches. I think he gets some more of those balls that end up going for touchdowns, and that keeps Jalen Hurts from this threshold.
Panthers at Giants.
All right, last and certainly not least, or maybe it is least on our list, Carolina Panthers at my New York Giants. The Panthers, 3-point favorites. Mike, I will ask you, Devin Kane of the Canty and Golic Jr. Show will boo the Giants more than once.
I'm going to go more likely here. I feel like Devin is ready to let out a lot of frustration here. And, Amber, I say this, I got a personal experience this last weekend. I was at the Giants debacle against the Rams, and I heard how unfortunate and ugly that got. We know that's kind of been the story around there for a while, and so I feel like this has a lot more to do with Devin now getting an outlet for his personal frustrations than anything else.
Yeah, I'll say lock it up. Like, this is happening. And Joe Judge, he's saying all the right things this week and something, you know, about the fish's head and how it rots and all that nonsense that's being said. That sounds like a bunch of coach speak, and it's fine, and his players are behind it, and they like that kind of talk, and he says all the right things. But the truth of the matter is, even if he's not willing to admit how injured this team is or use injuries as an excuse, the truth of the matter is this is a bad Giants team, and now it's a very beat-up Giants team. Saquon, Kenny Galladay, Kadarius Toney, none of them practiced yesterday. Andrew Thomas, I mean, you have a lot of pieces that are potentially missing this week for the Giants. Lock it up. Devin's going to be doing a lot of booing this weekend.
Listen, I was at a game way back when Jim Fossil was still the coach, and the fire Fossil chants started coming out when I was there. So I'm trying to think of a catchy chant. Maybe we can tease that. I don't know what I'm going to say, but yeah, there will probably be boos.
What about Devin Judge Joe?
Judge Joe. I like that a lot. Judge and jury. We're workshopping it.
There we go. See? It's all about working
on the fly.
It needs a little
work by you guys.
Yeah, listen. Is it our best effort? No. Are we trying? only a little bit. Just enough here to get you to the NFL weekend to see if Devin. Listen, maybe, you know what? Maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe there'll be something to cheer about in New York. I don't know. It's just wishful thinking. 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Coming up next, though, we do have to switch gears and head back to one of the dominant NFL storylines of this last year that might affect a quarterback just trying to get his career going. That's next here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
The Road to the World Series goes through ESPN Radio. Catch all the postseason action presented by AutoZone on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coverage of the ALCS Game 6 between the Red Sox and the Astros starting right after us here, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN Radio. It's Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. And before we get to the Red Sox and their quest to stave off elimination in this Game 6, Amber, I think the more and more we go along here and have this conversation surrounding Deshaun Watson and what may or may not happen before the trade deadline in the NFL, the more and more I keep coming back to Tua Tagovailoa and all this, because I know why everything that could happen potentially here is happening here. Like, football and the ability to play at a high level are the only currency this league rewards. There's no morality. There's no anything else here when it is leveraged at the expense of talent and what that can do for an organization. Because winning's the only goal here. But I do wonder what the future looks like for Tua Tagovailoa. We so far have seen so little of this player on the field because he, you know, in his rookie year was coming off a catastrophic injury, and you had Ryan Fitzpatrick start the first half of the season. You start this year and he gets beat up behind a bad offensive line. And I just wonder if, from what you've seen so far, you're down here in South Florida, you've seen this up close and personal here, if you still think that there's a player that can be salvaged from whatever happens. Because I imagine all of this is taking a mental toll on him as well.
I would think so. Although Tua, I think, has certainly faced some adversity in his career, stemming back to that injury in college and everything that happened to him there at the end of Alabama. And then falling, I mean, you are talking about a player who was a year before that supposed to be easy number one pick and tank for Tua and all that. And he ends up getting picked fifth because of that injury. He certainly has faced his fair share of adversity here over the last 3 years. And notably, like you mentioned, sharing time with Ryan Fitzpatrick, he gets benched towards the end of the season for Fitzpatrick because the Dolphins found themselves in the unusual situation of actually trying to make the playoffs and actually trying to win games. And they did overperform last year and they did win 10 games and they did feel like Ryan Fitzpatrick had more experience and gave them a better opportunity there at the end of the season to actually try to clinch a playoff berth, which they ended up failing in doing so. And in hindsight, it probably would have made a lot more sense just to let Tua ride out the entire year, not to take that time at the beginning of the season, starting Ryan Fitzpatrick, then you bring Tua in halfway through the season, then you end up benching him for Fitzpatrick, and Fitzy's always breathing over his shoulder, and he's always there and waiting, and finally you get rid of Ryan Fitzpatrick this year, but now, like, the Deshaun Watson rumors have taken the place of Ryan Fitzpatrick, where, yeah, Deshaun Watson's not on this roster, but you feel like those rumors are staring over the shoulder of Tua all season long. From that perspective, he hasn't had a fair shake, and maybe it would have been better, instead of them winning 10 games, to have discovered what they have in Tua last season by allowing him to start the entire season. But the truth of the matter is now they find themselves 1-5 coming off of a 10-win season where they overperformed. They are grossly underperforming this season when he is the starting quarterback and when he is getting those opportunities and when nobody's vying for Jacoby Brissett in place of Tua Tagovailoa. So now this was supposed to be his time, and now he's dealing with all those rumors. I do think that he's a player who's mentally tough, but also we can't ignore where he is in this point in his career compared to some of those other dudes who were drafted at the same time as him.
Well, and Amber, I don't know if he would have necessarily been better than Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert from what we've seen so far, but I think them winning 10 games matters a lot in how we contextualize that, right? Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert were seen as the bright spot on bad teams last season. Mm-hmm. You know, Justin Herbert's Chargers were a 7-9 outfit. Joe Burrow got hurt halfway through the season on a bad Bengals team. Tua walked into a situation where that team got ahead of schedule quickly, and I have to imagine that framework for a lot of it, even regardless of the switching in and out with Fitzpatrick, matters a ton in how we look at him now.
Yeah, well, I think that is an important piece here, where when we discuss Herbert and we discuss Burrow, it's not like we're talking about dudes who are on great teams. And so, like, yeah, they, you know, they walked it, they sat for a minute and they walked into the Patrick Mahomes situation. And of course, you know, Tua would look better in that situation as well, kind of thing. That's not the case here. Like, we are talking about the Cincinnati Bengals. It's not like we're talking about amazing organizations that these guys walked into. And they did look a lot better than Tua did in his rookie season. Now, yes, you can talk about how he was coming off that hip injury, and again, Ryan Fitzpatrick being on the roster with him, and maybe some coaching faux pas there with trying to toggle them back and forth. It may not be all the fault of Tua, but he is going to get compared to those two other guys, and it's not as if those two other guys were on marquee teams or marquee franchises where they walked into excellent situations. And yet, even on bad teams, we knew pretty early on that both of those two dudes are the quarterbacks of the future of their teams. And we're still asking whether Tua is. And here's the problem in Miami, Mike. Like, Tua finds himself uniquely in a city that spent 7 years before him asking if Ryan Tannehill's the guy, asking if Ryan Tannehill's any good. And we never had an answer to that until I saw him in a Tennessee Titans uniform. You know, we never really knew. It was like, is he good? Is he bad? Depended on the game. And so here we are with Tua, and now we're in year two, and we're asking the same question. And I think we have a short attention span in Miami because we've been asking it for darn near a decade at this point with these two quarterbacks.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. That quarterback of the future notion here, who we hear that from, I think for Tua is going to matter going forward. Brian Flores, the Dolphins head coach, spoke at their presser yesterday and was pretty unequivocal in how he viewed the situation.
You know, I don't really get into rumors. Tua's our quarterback. We're happy with the quarterback, our quarterback situation. And you know, I'll leave it at that, which, you know, we've said and I've said multiple times.
And Amber, as good as that is, and I mean, for Tua, hearing it from your head coach is like the baseline you've got to hear. But this is almost vote of confidence territory, because something you've brought up a number of times today has been all the rumors that we've kind of heard starting this season about, well, which quarterback everyone in the organization really wanted to draft in that draft, who really was tied to who, now that we've got the benefit of hindsight here. And I feel like all of that clouding around it, again, it is, do the actions match the words, right? And for any player, that's all you ask for. That's how you get trust in these situations. And right now, I'm sure part of Tua's head has to be spinning even after Flores says that.
I mean, I can't even keep up with all these rumors. And by the way, one of them is that Flores actually wanted Justin Herbert, and he got overruled and ended up with Tua. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know who wanted who. Obviously, we certainly have the benefit now of hindsight when it comes to all of these rumors and evaluating these quarterbacks. I do think it's important, though, here to point out that the Dolphins are not 1-5 because of Tua, and the Dolphins did not lose to the Jags because of Tua last week. Like, Tua actually had 329 yards and a couple touchdowns. He was 33 of 47. Tua was not the problem last week. There's a lot of problems on this team that extend far beyond Tua. But unfortunately, he plays a position in the NFL where he's going to get all the attention, even if it's not deserved.
And he was already the subject of the focus, because last year he was part of the issue down the stretch of the season that a lot of people thought the defense is performing, the special teams are performing here, and the way we view and talk about these players. You're absolutely right, Amber, especially at the top of the draft. You're asked to come in and overcome a lot of the mistakes of the people around you, the comparatively lesser talent, the people that aren't paid as much as you, on and on down the list. Like, we know how that's the game how the game goes. It doesn't make it any easier to stomach if you are Tua Tagovailoa trying to digest all of this, or if you're the people around Tua, because I can always fall back on, man, when you're in that locker room, he can talk with Brian Flores every day. He can hear it straight from the horse's mouth. His family and the people closest to him can't, and after a while, that can certainly seep in. Coming up next, though, we'll take a look at tonight, Game 6 in the ALCS. Can the Red Sox manage to stave off elimination? Next, you're on ESPN Radio.